Welcome to Making Connections, a WMMT series on diversifying our future.
The characters in today's story are all connected to Pikeville, Kentucky's Appalachian Seed Swap, but the story is much bigger than that. People all across the country are working to create a revival of small-scale agriculture, and the Seed Swap is one example of how Appalachia has already become a hub of this moment. WMMT's Benny Becker explored this reality with some of the people who are working to make the shift happen and to cement Appalachia's place in it. Here's what he learned about the efforts to turn Appalachia's rich and varied food traditions into a sustainable economy.
When I met Joseph Simcox, he put forward a cob of blue corn for me to grab and shake instead of shaking his hand.
Okay, well, shake hands. Shake cob.
Then he excused himself, and when he came back, he had a box brimming with some of the wildest-looking corn cob seeds and beans I've ever seen. A seed for every color of the rainbow with plenty to spare.
Like, look at that. Isn't that just gorgeous?
He first introduced me to some ancient corn
from the valley of Urubamba in Peru.
And only then did he introduce himself.
I'm wanting to be known as a Johnny Appleseed type of guy. My name is Joseph Simcox.
All his life, Joseph Simcox has been obsessed with seeds and the food that they produce.
If you hold a seed in your hand, here, hold your hand out. Okay. You are holding the integral ingredients that will make a plant which sustains life. And even as a little kid, when people told me that, I couldn't believe it. It was something that just was magical. So for my 7th birthday party, I have a vivid picture that shows me sitting with a table full of squash. That is what I asked for my birthday. I wanted squash, not a G.I. Joe. And from that point on, I've been saving seeds.
And now he really is trying to be a modern-day Johnny Appleseed. He travels the world to collect and share seeds, and also to study and consult on sustainable agriculture.
And as I've traveled the world, now over 105 countries, I have come to realize that much of what we hear is merely corporate propaganda.
As I understand it, Simcox's take on what's wrong with modern agriculture has two big parts. First is that eating industrialized food has made us ignorant.
It's just by the lull of convenience, you know, driving up to the fast food window, that we've been so separated from where food comes from.
The second part is that when people don't know where their food's coming from, the food industry is free to do things that are good for business but aren't the best for the food itself or the people who eat it. As an example, he described how certain qualities of tomatoes have become more important than how they taste.
One of the prerequisites for a shippable tomato is that it can bounce out of the harvest truck, fall onto the pavement at 20, 30, 40 miles an hour, and be picked back up and thrown into the truck. That is to tell you that we are eating cardboard or plastic because the great constituent of that tomato is cellulose. So those super, super tasty relics of past are now supplanted by varieties that have shippability as their number one priority.
For Joseph Simcox, this just doesn't seem like an arrangement that can last, and he has a vision for what could come next.
I see the entire United States transformed over the next 10 or 15 years. We're going to see small towns all over America springing back to life. We're going to see a whiplash against the major stores because as we realize that they have whittled away our economies, as we realize they have taken away our opportunities, we are going to go back to the community, and that is going to be an amazing transformation of America.
In fact, Simcox already sees the makings of a movement to turn his vision into reality.
The USDA cited some 8,000-plus farmers markets, up several thousand from a few years before, so it's a crescendo. It's growing. People are getting back to food. There's people getting in touch with sustainability, a catchphrase that related to food. It's that maybe we shouldn't be eating strawberries that are coming from 3,000 miles away. Maybe we should try to grow strawberries more at home.
And this is where Appalachia comes into the picture and things get really interesting.
You are in the center of America. You're kind of like the Eastern Heartland. And as the Eastern Heartland, you have within a very short distance, say 400 or 500 miles, great epicenters of population, whether it's Washington, D.C., whether it's Nashville, Tennessee, you're close. I know 500 miles doesn't sound close, but when you think that the vast majority of our vegetables comes from California, 3,000 miles away, it is much closer.
But location is just the start. The reason Simcox is in town and the reason he's really excited about Appalachia is that our mountains and culture have done a really good job of creating and preserving an enormous variety of unique plants that are only found here.
Some people say that the mountains are barriers. I don't think of it that way. I think we're kind of in a cradle, and we're unique in that every holler has got their own beans and seeds.
That's Joyce Pinson, speaking from the event that she co-founded and still helps organize today.
Today is the fourth annual Appalachian Seed Swap held at Pike Central High School, the first Saturday in April.
Like the broader movement that Joseph Simcox was describing, the Appalachian Seed Swap has grown a lot in recent years.
We started out our first year, we thought, oh, if we have 25, we'll be doing really good. And we had 125. I have expectations today we will be at 600 to 1,000. So, exciting times!
And as it's grown in size, the Appalachian Seed Swap has also grown in reach.
The fame of the Appalachian Seed Swap is going far beyond its confines. I heard about this last year in New York City.
For Joseph Simcox, it wasn't surprising that Eastern Kentucky would be home to a world-class seed swap.
If I were to take the U.S. map and I were to make food culture hotspots right now, it's the Northeast, it's the Northwest, it's certain parts of California, and here in this several state area of Appalachia. People are very, very intense about food, where it comes from, and how they have it.
Now, if you're like me, our region stands out on that list. The reality is, there's a bit less money floating around here to be spent on fancy boutique vegetables and the like, but that's where Simcox came back to the idea of Appalachia as the eastern heartland, with potential to supply vegetables to the whole East Coast. And then he began to explain what it would take to make that happen.
First thing the counties could do is create food hubs, because small growers don't have the necessary wherewithal to pack vegetables commercially. It takes a little bit of a process to get a vegetable from the field in good condition to many hundreds of miles away.
There are already a few food hubs in our region, and they're already having an impact. At the Seed Swap, we met Gina from Lucky Clover Farms in Richmond, Kentucky. Thanks in part to the Jackson County Regional Food Center, her family has been able to process and sell their produce.
Kroger just placed an order for 11,000 tomato plants this year. And I do jams and jellies, so they're also in Kroger, and other retail stores throughout the state.
We also met people who were growing on a smaller scale and selling at their local farmers market. And by Joyce Pinson's estimation, many people at the Appalachian Seed Swap are just growing for their own families.
It goes without saying that the economy, with coal being down, people are thinking about how they can save money, and one of the ways they can save money is by growing their own food. It's keeping Appalachian traditions alive and being self-sustainable as well, and creating a good community and a good family environment.
Joseph Simcox has also given some thought to how our connection to the coal industry could affect agriculture in the region.
Land has been destroyed by mines. I don't have any problem with it having been destroyed because there was a need to mine. But to reclaim the land is also essential. And many of those mining strips aren't necessarily the most fertile pieces of ground. So we have to plant something that's going to be resilient, and those are pioneer plants.
He had lots of suggestions for plants that fit the description. Chokeberries, autumn olive, and here's one that sounded especially exciting.
Sea buckthorn, if planted in those mine areas, would thrive, and it would produce what I call the orange juice of the north. Right now in Whole Foods, you will find sea buckthorn being sold for $40 for a quart. And this is because it's such a superfood. And this is something that Appalachia could take extraordinary advantage of to reclaim the mines, because it settles in areas that most plants won't grow in, and it produces an abundant crop of superberries.
If you're not trying to grow on an old mine site, Simcox recommends growing something that's unique, a traditional heirloom variety, or something unusual like the American groundnut, which sounds really delicious. Simcox suggests growing something uncommon, partly because he thinks delicious variety just makes life better.
It's not only interesting to the taste, it's interesting to the mind to think of where all these things come from. It's something about the spice of life.
And partly because if you have a good story, your produce will be easier to sell.
Who are you competing against? You're competing against that big store down the road with a star on it, Walmart. I can't compete with a big guy on the price of a regular tomato, but I can grow a beautiful variety of heirloom that nobody else has make a good story about it that's relevant, and I can compete because nobody else has it. So specialize. You can go to a chef, and lo and behold, he'll say, I love it. I want it as much as you can give me. Things like that happen, and it's reality.
Simcox had a lot of advice to offer, and we can't air it all, but this message maybe gets to the heart of it.
If you're not big, the way to do it better is to team up as a group, because that gives you more power in the first place.
Joseph Simcox's organization, Gardens Across America, is one of many groups out there that you can team up with. They can offer advice in terms of crops and strategy, and they can connect you with other local experts. Plus, they even have a deal where they'll give you some rare seeds to grow if you just agree to send some seed back to them for their seed bank. You can look them up online, Gardens Across America, they're easy to find. But coming back to the big picture, I found it really striking just how optimistic Simcox is about the role of Appalachia in the revival of traditional crops, small-scale agriculture, and small-town America.
So this kind of love for tradition here in Appalachia is a boiling pot that's going to boil over and influence much of the rest of the United States. Not unlike the folk music of past, not unlike the country music past, not unlike certain traditions going all the way to moonshine. I mean, you influence the rest of America. We're going to become more advanced technologically, but we're going to be honoring of the traditions past that were so important to making America great in the beginning. I think Eastern Kentucky is a wonderful, wonderful place to start.
I'm Benny Becker, and this is Real People Radio, WMMT.
Making Connections is brought to you by WMMT, Mountain Community Radio. Find out more at makingconnectionsnews.org.